कृष्ण पदाय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्त वृंदा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा। सो थैंक यू ऑल वेरी मच फॉर ज्वाइनिंग टुडे सेशन। We have been discussing from this book, Bhaktyaloka by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in which this is a collection of essays by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur on the six topics that are unfavorable for progressing on the path of devotional service and six topics which are very favorable for progressing on the path of devotional service. Atyahara prayasascha prajalpo niyamagraha janasangascha laulyamcha shadbir bhaktir vinashyati, the six items which actually destroy one's bhakti. The first six essays we had already discussed. And then the next items, Utsaha, Nishchayat, Dairyat, Tattat, Karma, Pravartanat, Sangatyagat, Sato, Vritte, Shagbir, Bhaktir, Prasidyati. The six items which are very favorable for progressing on the path of bhakti. Utsaha, or enthusiasm being the first, we have already discussed that essay. And currently we are discussing the theme of Nishchaya. So Nishchaya means to endeavor with determination. So, on that theme, we have been discussing essentially the emphasis on this essay of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is you can endeavor only if we are free of doubts. Therefore, we should learn to kill the demon of doubts. This is the whole emphasis of this essay, and that's what we have been discussing the last maybe 2 or 3 weeks on this theme. So, we will continue the topic, but before that, I'll request Radha Pramod Prabhu to do a recap of what we saw last week, and then I will take it up from there. Over to you, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Om Ajnana Dimirandasya Jnana Anjana Shalakaya Chakshur Nilithamena Tasmai Sri Gravima. So, we are doing essay number 8. It is Nishchaya, Confidence and Determination. We are in the section 2, where we discussion on Dashamula Tattva. So in this, the second one, Lord Hari is the only worshipable Lord. The Supreme Lord Brahman, Hari is the only worshipable Lord. His impersonal conception is called Brahman. The Supreme Lord Hari is one of his expansions. It becomes the super soul. Lord Hari is none other than Krishna. The super soul is none other than Vishnu, and his bodily presence is none other than Brahman. So this is understanding. And Lord Hari is full of inconceivable potencies. He is Sarva Shaktiman. Parashya Shaktir Vividhaiva Shruyate Swabhaviki Jnana Balakriyacha. The Supreme Lord has multipotencies which act so perfectly that all consciousness, strength and activity are being directed solely by His will. This is from Kshetrasrutam. Also, we discuss further that how Lord Sri Krishna is full of spiritual rasas. This is Akhila Rasamrita Murti. And Sri Krishna is full of spiritual rasas. And by Lord's inconceivable potency, the unlimited rasas of spiritual have been manifested in Vrindavan pastimes of this world. And the pure spirit soul is eligible for spiritual rasa. And a living entity attains that on the strength of his devotional service. So the living entity is so versatile, it can fall to a lowest category and it can reach the highest stage also. And attaining the Supreme Brahman is devoid of rasa or drive. And there is no manifestation of rasa in realization of Paramatma also, in Brahman and Paramatma. And then the another important aspect that is from discussion from Dashamula Siksha is that jivas are part of Krishna and are innumerable. Living entities are manifested by a portion of spiritual energy. And jivas are not fully spiritual. They are tatastha shakti. Jivas are incomplete spirit, and that's why they get illusion. And the living entities are divided into two groups, those searching for their own happiness and those searching for Krishna's happiness. And and those who search for Krishna's happiness are called Nityamukta, and those searching for their own happiness are called Nityabandha. Okay, there is some more part in the first section only. Therefore, the Vedic statement ascertained by the previous Mahajans as relating to the qualification for devotees are called Amniya. This is the first Dashamoola Shiksha, and it is necessary to learn them. It is impossible to enter into inconceivable nature without receiving the full mercy of spiritual master. And the Vedic knowledge received through Guru Parampara, it is called Amniya, the knowledge from the Shastras. And there are so many subjects in the Vedas, and that are, and there are various instructions for different qualifications based on the Adhikar. That's why we need a Guru. The Vedic statements ascertained by previous Mahajans are as relating to the qualifications for devotion are called Amniya, and it is necessary to learn from them. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Guru. Thank you very much. So, we will continue our discussion from where we left. I will do a small, not exactly a recap, but some added points based on what we have been discussing. Just to connect the dots, that's all. So, we have been discussing on this theme of Nishchaya, just to, because last we met was 15 days back, because last week due to some other program we had to cancel our session. So I will do a very quick bird's eye view of what we have been discussing. So Nishchaya means confidence, or endeavoring with confidence and determination. So basically Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it is possible to endeavor with confidence only if we kill the demons of doubt. So he says that for a doubtful person, there is no auspiciousness. And then he talks about these categories of people who are faithless, who are struggling with the element of faith. Agnyascha ashraddhadanascha samshayatma vinashyati nayam lokosti naparo nastvam samshayatmanah. So he says that these three categories of people, those who do not have, those who are ignorant of the scriptures, so do not know the conclusions of the scriptures, though they don't have faith in the scriptures. The second category are those who have a very theoretical understanding of what is there in the scriptures, but they don't have faith that it needs to be applied in their lives, a very academic understanding. But the third and the most problematic category are they who have thin bhakti, but that faith has been shaken by unfavorable experiences. So basically we were discussing that these are the cynical insiders, because of unfavorable experiences within the category of bhakti, because they were not properly nourished and taken care, either personally or emotionally or philosophically or devotionally. So therefore, due to bad experiences, they have developed faith in the, they have developed doubts in the process. So such people, because they lack the alternate faith, because their faith in material pursuits and material enjoyment has also been broken. But at the same time, their devotional experience is not pleasant enough for them to trust devotees, the process completely. So such people get suffocated and they suffer a lot. So we were on this theme, we were discussing the importance of being very conscious that our actions may be the cause of someone becoming a cynical insider, then it's a very, very big disservice to the mission of Srila Prabhupada, actually. It is the greatest disservice if our actions and our behavior lead to people becoming cynical insiders. We should, as far as possible, act in ways that will nourish the faith of the other person. So, and enhance their confidence in the process of bhakti rather than create doubts. Because if one develops doubts, then one will not progress with confidence. So we were discussing on this theme, right? So then we did discuss that that in order to be doubtless, one has to develop faith which is properly based on the Shastric conclusions. One has to develop faith which is properly grounded in Shastric conclusions. So basically Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mentions that the Vedic scriptures speak about three prominent subject matters: Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojan. And this Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojan can be divided into essentially 10 essential truths, which is called as Dashamoola Tattva. So, so these of the 10 essential truths, the first truth is that what is the pramana? What is the evidence? Okay, especially to understand transcendental subject matter, we understand that pratyaksha pramana and anumana pramana are insufficient or incapable of especially understanding subject matter which is transcendental to the material senses and material mind, which is spiritual essentially. So the only possible pramana or evidence is the Vedic scriptures. So this is the first essential truth. So the most reliable source of knowledge is are the Vedas. And the Vedas speak about 9 essential conclusions which are accepted by all the Vaishnava Sampradayas, understand and accept these 9 essential truths, of which 7 talk about Sambandha, 1 talks about Abhideya, and another 1 talks about the Prayojan. So, of the Sambandha Tattvas, 3 are about Jatva, 3 of the Tattvas are about the Supreme Lord, Absolute Truth, 3 are about the Jiva Tattva, and 1 is about the Achinta Beda Bed, connection between the Lord and His energies. So these are the 7 Sambandha Tattvas, and the 8th, which is the Abhideya Tattva, is Bhakti is the means of attaining the goal, and the final 10th, the last Tattva is the Prayojana Tattva, that the goal of life is Krishna Prem. This is what the Shastras speak about. So, Sambandha Tattvas which are related to the Absolute Truth are, the Supreme Absolute Truth is Krishna. That is the first Sambandha Tattva. And the second Sambandha Tattva is that Krishna is Sarva Shaktiman. He is omnipotent. He has all the potencies. And the third of the Sambandha Tattva is that he is not just Sarva Shaktiman, but he is also Akhila Rasamrita Murti. He is actually a reservoir of all transcendental emotions or relationships. He can perfectly reciprocate with every single living entity in a particular rasa, which completely satisfies the heart of that living entity. So these are the 3 Sambandha Tattvas which relate with respect to the Supreme Lord. And with respect to the Jivatmas, the Sambandha Tattva is that the living entities, Jivatmas, are his separated part and parcels. Then the 6th is that there are some Jivatmas, due to their constitutional position as marginal living entities, they may come under the influence of material energy. So that is so the nitya baddha jivatmas are the sixth, and then the seventh is there are some other due to their marginal potency they come under the influence of he is free from the influence of the material energy, that is the siddha. And then so these are, and then the eighth is the achintya bhedabhed connection between the Lord and his energies, how the Lord and his energies are simultaneously one and different, so inconceivably and simultaneously one and different from the Supreme Lord. This achintya bhedabhed tattva is the eighth principle. And then the ninth principle is shuddha bhakti or sadhana bhakti is the means to attain the goal. And the last principle is the goal is Krishna prema. So these are the 10 dashamoola tattvas. So in which we discussed about how shabda pramana is the highest pramana. So he says that there are many types of pramanas, prasha, anuman, and pratyaksha praman, anuman praman, and shabda praman. And then there are other such subcategory pramanas are there. But of the three, shabda praman is the topmost pramana. Because in order to conceive transcendental subject matters with ordinary pratyaksha praman using the material senses, and anuman praman using the material mind and intelligence, it is not possible to conceive. So therefore, inconceivable natures cannot be known without self-realization. So only when we reach the stage of self-realization, then we can know. Know means know through personal experience. We can know transcendental subject, but till then we are dependent on shabda praman. We have to depend upon trustworthy testimony of the sharas to inform us about the transcendental reality, because our senses and mind, current senses and mind, which are conditioned, with that it is not possible to experience transcendental reality. So therefore we are definitely dependent on the testimony of the Vedic conclusions. So therefore we cannot use our pratyaksha praman and our anuman praman to enter into that subject matter. So in order to know the inconceivable nature, self-realization is the only means. But self-realization is impossible for ordinary people. So therefore, we need scriptures. Till we reach self-realization, we need scriptures. Once we attain self-realization, then scriptures are not needed. Because one can personally experience the conclusions of the Shastras through their personal experience. So they are no longer dependent on the Shastra. The conclusions of the Shastras. That is why in Bhakti Rasam Sindhu Srila Rupa Goswami says, Vaida Bhakti Adhikari Tu Bhava Avirbhavana Avadi Atra Shastram Tatatarkam Anukulam Apekshate. He says that for a Vaidhi Sadhakas, till reach the stage of Bhava, they should consider as very favorable the statements of the Shastras. They should try to see everything through the eyes of the Shastras, and it is considered very favorable for them till they reach the stage of Bhava. Once they reach the stage of Bhava, which is the self-realization, then they are no longer dependent on seeing through the scriptures, because they can directly see through their spiritualized senses and mind and intelligence like that. So But because self-realization is almost impossible for ordinary people, the scriptures gave the Vedas. In Chaitanya Charitamrit, it is mentioned, Maya Mugdha Ver Nahi Swata Krishna Gyan Jivera Kripai Kaila Krishna Veda Puran. So how Krishna saw the conditioned state and the suffering state of the living entities, and he gave the Vedas and Puranas like that. So in this we discuss that how that jada pratyaksha, at the material realm, the pratyaksha that we have is only material, with our material senses. And at the realm of spiritual reality, at the realm of self-realization, we a living entity develops that transcendental vision, transcendental pratyaksha. So pratyaksha praman is sufficient for a person who reaches the stage of transcendental reality, and pratyaksha praman is almost sufficient for a person who is at the material realm trying to understand only material reality. Now for a person who is conditioned but aspiring to understand spiritual reality without realization, the bridge is shabda. So till he reaches self-realization, he is dependent on shabda. But once he reaches the stage of self-realization, he has already developed transcendental sense. So with that, he can directly experience spiritual reality. So at stage, there is no need for scriptures. Right? And then, Veda Shastra kahe sambandha abideya prayojan, Krishna prapya sambandha bhakti praptyera sadhan. Abideya nama bhakti prema prayojan, purushartha shiromani prema mahadhan. So the Vedas and Shastras talk about sambandha, abideya and prayojana. And sambandha is one's relationship with Krishna, and abideya is the means of attaining Krishna prema, which is sadhana bhakti, that is the abideya, and prema is the prayojan or the goal. Okay, so he says there are so many subject matters in the Vedas, and there are various instructions for different qualifications. We were discussing on this theme, if you remember, that Shara speak in terms of adhikar or qualification. So different instructions are there for people with different types of adhikar. So people with karma adhikar are given instructions for performing karma, and people with jnana adhikar are given instructions for performing jnana, and people with bhakti adhikar are given instructions for performing bhakti. So the instructions are according to one's qualification. So, okay. And amongst all qualifications, the qualification for devotional life is the topmost. So he says, so therefore, people who have qualification for bhakti, which scriptures they should follow? Only those scriptures which have been sanctioned the previous Mahajans as relating to the qualifications for devotion, that only should be accepted. So we cannot indiscriminately read any Vedic scriptures. Only those scriptures which our acharyas have commented upon and assigned for us to study, only they should be accepted. So we cannot, without the mercy of the spiritual master, we cannot individually try to enter into the realm of inconceivable nature. And then he explains that how in Chaitanya Charitamrita he describes that through a parable. He explains that don't go in the eastern direction, don't go in the southern direction, don't go in the northern direction, don't go in the western direction, you will not get. But if you little bit dig in the eastern direction, you will immediately get that treasure that your father has left behind. So the treasure is prema, and southern, northern and the eastern directions, on the western directions, they talk about karma, jnana and yoga. And the eastern direction is the direction of bhakti, where through bhakti you can easily attain the prema mahadhan, and to approach karma jnana or yoga, one will never come, you know, never even come closer to prema like that. So when a person desires spiritual perfection, hears the conclusions regarding the soul from the spiritual master, then his heart becomes pure and he proceeds towards the lotus feet of Krishna like that. So therefore one should consider, so therefore the shastras ultimate pramana, and amongst the shastras one should follow only those shastras which have been ascertained by our acharyas as being relevant for practitioners of devotional service. And especially one's own sampradaya acharyas, whatever books they have suggested, only those books should be accepted. And the rest of the books are not, either not meant for cultivating devotional service or not meant for cultivating the particular mood of devotional service which our acharyas and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have come to give. So we should not be indiscriminate in reading and accepting any shastras and any scriptures. We should very clearly accept only scriptures our acharyas have recommended, our own Gaudiya Vaishnava acharyas have recommended. So this was about the first Dashamoola Tattva. The second Dashamoola Tattva about the Supreme Lord Hari is about the absolute truth, is that the absolute truth is a person, and that person is Lord Hari. It is not Lord Brahma, it is not Lord Shiva, it is none of the demigods. That absolute truth is a person, and that person is Lord Hari or Lord Krishna. Okay. So, and the impersonal aspect, the bodily effulgence of that absolute truth, Krishna, is the Brahman feature. Yasya prabha prabhavato jagadanda koti koti svashesha vasudadi vibhuti binnam tad brahma nishkalam ananta mashesha bhutam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. So the bodily effulgence of that Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari is Brahman, and his the expansion of that Supreme Lord, super soul present in everyone's heart, that is Paramatma, and that is the Paramatma feature. So, and we understand that Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan are the same personality, but perceived with different levels of devotional short-sightedness. When someone is severely devotionally short-sighted, then he sees the absolute truth, or he perceives the absolute truth as Brahman, as an impersonal entity having no qualities, no form, no etc. But when one progresses on the path of devotion little bit more, then one develops the ability to perceive the absolute truth as possessing some form, some qualities, some activities, but only form, qualities, activities with respect to maintaining and helping with the functioning of this material universe. That is Paramatma realization. You know, how the Supreme Lord in his Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu, Shirodaka Sai Vishnu and Karanodaka Sai Vishnu forms, how they are engaged in taking care of the material universe's functioning. So that is actually Paramatma realization. Because they are not devotionally sufficiently endowed, they lack the sufficient sukriti, they cannot actually see that the Supreme Lord is also a person. He has personal choice, he has personal devotee. He likes to interact with them, he likes to enjoy personal pastimes with them. So for them to conceive of these things is very difficult, because they lack sufficient sukriti to see the Supreme Lord as this kind of a person. actually. So he says, only when one is freed from all doubts does he attain unflinching devotion to Krishna. So like that. So, and only such a person will worship the Bhagavan feature of the Lord. Okay. So then the third tattva is that Lord Hari is Sarva Shaktiman. He is full of all, full of inconceivable potencies. All kinds of contradictory potencies are also present in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like birth. Like Uddhava says, Karmani anihasya bhavo abhavasyate Durga shrayo ata aribayat palayanam Kalatmano yat pramada yutashrama Swatman rate kidyati dhir vidamiha. He says that Karmani anihasya. The Shastras say that the Supreme Lord has no activities. Aniha. But he does perform so many activities. Right? Either one does not act or he acts. But action and inaction cannot coexist in a living entity. But in the Supreme Lord, they can coexist. So, for example, how they can coexist? They can not coexist entity because they are completely opposed. But they are not contradictory qualities for Krishna. Because Krishna's constitution is different. So for him, these two qualities are not contradictory. Bhavo abhavasya. You know, Krishna, the Shastras say that the Lord is not born. But at the same time, he takes birth. Now, how is this possible? If you see, in a living entity, birth means, there is no exhibition of free will. The jiva cannot choose its father and mother. The jiva has no independence. Neither can the father and mother choose the jiva. Right? So, birth indicates a state of absolute lack of independence and total control of karma. But in the case of Krishna, Krishna also takes birth. But his birth is not controlled by karma and he has absolute independence with respect to where he can take birth, and Krishna can choose his father and mother and appear. Okay. So, this kind of contradiction, birth and no birth, no birth in the sense, it is not the kind of birth that the living entities take place. You know, the living entities birth simultaneously means lack of free will, lack of choice, complete control, completely controlled by material nature. But with respect to Krishna, Krishna chooses. Krishna's birth takes place through absolute control, his own control. Even the birth of perfected living entities, even though it is not according to karma, it is not according to their own desire, but it is according to Krishna's desire. But Krishna's appearance is according to his own desire. So therefore, the Shastras say, Krishna is Ajanma. He does not take birth. In the sense, his birth is not like our birth. But at the same time, he does take birth. So these contradictory qualities can coexist in Krishna, but they cannot coexist in the living entity. And at the same time, for example, another thing he says that Swatman Rate Durga Shriva Taribayat Palayanam Kalatmanoyat Pramada Yutashrama. So Pramada Yutashrama Swatman Rate, he says that he is Atmarati, he is completely self-satisfied, but at the same time, he is very much controlled by his wives. Now, can in the material world, if and he is not just controlled by one wife, but he is controlled by 16,108 wives. That is only wives. But practically, Krishna is controlled by every single of his devotee. So now, in the material world, any living entity, when you call them Atmarati, self-satisfied, and if they are controlled by others, then either he is self-satisfied or he is controlled by others. Both these qualities cannot coexist in a living entity. But in the case of Krishna, to be Atmarati and to be dependent on his wives or to be dependent on his devotees is not a contradictory quality which cannot coexist. They can coexist. How? So Krishna is self-satisfied and bhakti, the bhakti which is there in the heart of the wives of Krishna or the devotees of Krishna, which controls Krishna, is a part of Krishna's swarupa. A part of Krishna's swarup shakti is bhakti. Bhakti shakti is a part, a very integral part, or one of the most important parts of Krishna's swarup shakti. So, when Krishna says Atmarati, and a part of that Atma is bhakti, actually. So, when Krishna is controlled by bhakti, and to say that Krishna is self-satisfied, they are not contradictory when it comes to Krishna. But when it comes to a living entity, when a living entity says, I am self-satisfied, and if he says, but I am dependent on the affection of my wife or my family members, then that is not a symptom of self-satisfaction. These two qualities cannot coexist in a person, in a jiva, but they can coexist in Krishna. Because the point is that Krishna is of a different constitution. Not entirely, but to a good extent. Right? So he is Sarva Shakti Man. He has inconceivable potencies, many of which are seemingly contradictory and non-coexistable in living entities, but they can very harmoniously and wonderfully coexist in Krishna. Okay. So, and then he says that even though the Supreme Lord has impersonal potencies and personal potencies, still of the two, the personal potencies are predominant potencies. Like that. And then he quotes that how he, you know, there are three prominent personal potencies are the Samvit, Sandini and Pladini potency, like that. And then in the next theme we discussed that how Lord Shri Krishna is not only Sarva Shaktiman, but he is also Akhila Rasamrita Murti. He is the personification of all spiritual rasas. Okay. So, Shanta Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya and Madhurya, all these rasas are perfectly exchanged with Krishna. In exchange with Krishna is that deep thirst for experiencing each of these emotions perfectly and completely satisfied in any living entity. So only Krishna is capable of fulfilling those needs and desires of the living entities. So this, the rasa in the spiritual world is pure. The rasa of the material world is a shadow rasa. So again, by the Lord's inconceivable potencies, the unlimited rasas of the spiritual world have been manifested in the Vrindavan pastimes of this world. The pure soul is eligible for spiritual rasa. And to attain that rasa is the dharma of the living entity. The natural quality of the living entity. So true self-realization means to reawaken the soul's constitutional ability to exchange love with Krishna in one of these five flavors. That is the constitutional nature of the soul. Right? I am not the body. I am the spirit soul. That level of self-realization is very preliminary. Okay. The real complete self-realization is to understand, not even understand that I am a servant of Krishna, not even understand that I am the servant of the Lord of the Gopis, but complete self-realization is to understand who am I in the spiritual world, what is my service, what is my name, what is the dress that I wear, my qualities, what do I do, and how do I serve Krishna? Okay, so that is complete self-realization. And actually to engage in that capacity is complete self-realization. Okay. And a living entity can attain this on the strength of his devotional service. So by practice of devotional service, what we should aspire for is to attain this love of God in one of these five flavors. Okay. And like that. And then finally he says, only devotional service, Krishna is full of rasa. Devotional service to any other forms of the Lord, Narasimha, Vamana, Rama, etc., is not completely full of all rasas. So this is about Krishna Tattva or Paratattva. Next three principles are about Jiva Tattva. So the first thing is that divas are the tatastha shakti of the Lord, the marginal potency of the Lord, and they are innumerable in number. So this is the first thing. So in this we were discussing last time. So the living entities are minute particles of the spiritual sun, Krishna, and they are innumerable. So we saw that the spiritual world is a manifestation of Krishna's Chit Shakti. The material world is a manifestation of Krishna's Maya Shakti. Whereas the living entities are a manifestation of a portion of spiritual energy. Portion of spiritual energy is called as Tatastha Shakti. So we were discussing that spirit also has directions. There is the spiritual world is spiritual, the spirit soul is spiritual, but both are not same kind of spiritual. Okay. So the spirit soul is marginal potency spirit. The spiritual world is complete spiritual potency. So that spiritual potency can never come under the influence of, whereas marginal spirit can come under the influence of Maya. Okay. Or at least can come under the, not exactly the influence, but can get bewildered by Maya. So he says, Krishna's spiritual form has all qualities in full, and those qualities are naturally present in the living entities in minute quantity. Like that. So the independent nature of Krishna is insignificantly there in the Jiva also. Therefore, the living entity has developed different propensities. the Nitya Baddha living entity searches its own happiness, yes, turned towards the material energy, and the Nitya Siddha living entities have turned towards Krishna, and they seek Krishna's happiness. So like that, there are two categories of living entities, Nitya Siddha and Nitya Baddha. So, or Nitya Mukta and Nitya Baddha. So he says, in this regard, all inconceivable natures are under the subordination of spiritual time. This is a very important point. We will get to this understanding in our next section. I think this is where we paused. This is where last time we have to continue this discussion further. Because we had a 15-day break, I took liberty to give a little elaborate recap of what we have seen in this section of Nishchaya. But at this point, I will pause to see if there are any quick discussion points, comments, questions based on what we have discussed in the last couple of weeks and whatever I have summarized till now. If there is any quick discussion points, we will take it right now and then proceed forward with today's discussion. Okay, there is one hand up. Hari Prasad Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Dandatram.
Dandatram.
Yeah. Prabhuji, in one of the lectures, I think you gave in Chaupati, where you are speaking that Srishti Leela is easier to understand than the Vrindavan Leela, something like that. So where you tell that for the Srishti Leela, we don't need any rasa. Experience of rasa we don't have, so it's very easy for us to relate to Srishti Leela, but where Vrindavan Leela, any other Leela, personal Leelas, where we don't have the backup of rasa in our with us, so we cannot relate with that, and it's very difficult to understand. That's what I took the conclusion from there. So you told, now what I the recap through recap what I understood is Srishti Leela means past tense related to the universe, that goes to show this is the realization of Paramatma, right? Paramatma realization, that's what you mentioned today. So is it that you're trying to mention it there also?
Yeah.
Are we trying
yeah.
to, is it, for, is it? Yes, bro, please. What I'm trying to ask is it that we are supposed to meditate more on Paramatma, more people of Paramatma Vadis, how they go, we have to follow them first, so that then slowly we get entrance into Vrindavan Leela? Or is it that something you are telling, other thing apart from this?
Well, to realize the Paramatma, one need not follow the path of yoga. And that is one way. But whatever can be achieved by the path of yoga or karma or jnana can be achieved by bhakti only. What I mentioned was that we cannot directly jump to the personal leela. One has to gradually in a respectful way approach the Srishti Leela also. And because Srishti Leela gives us the understanding of the Lord's Aishwarya. So, and when we have a proper understanding of the Lord's Aishwarya, then with the right mood, we will approach the Madhurya of the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, we will take the Madhurya Leela, or Madhurya in the sense not conjugal, but the sweet Leela, to be very deep. So, in that sense. So, I did not say that one has to practice yoga to realize Paramatma and then practice bhakti to understand Bhagavan, not in that sense. But as and when the Srishti Leela is described in the Bhagavatam and other such literatures, one should approach those subject matters with due diligence and due respect, and not consider that, oh, these are just some non-essential details like that. In that mood I was mentioning. Is that relevant, Hari Sathru?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Okay. Tiffany Mataji?
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, Dandavat Pranam. Thank you so much for the recap after, like you said, we had that break. I really appreciate that. I think it's a small question. I just, I just a moment ago, when you were talking about the marginal energy, you made a distinction, and I want to ask what that distinction was about. When you were talking about the marginal energy, you began to say that the marginal energy comes under the influence of Maya, but then you refined it and changed it to bewilderment.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering. Yeah. Okay.
So what I meant was that the jiva has nothing to do with matter. The jiva is distinct from matter, and the jiva does not get affected by matter. But under the influence of the ignorance, the jiva can start identifying with matter and undergo all kinds of turmoil due to that identification with matter. Even though jiva has nothing to do with matter, but because of the ignorance of Maya, ignorance potency of Maya, the jiva can identify with matter, and when matter transforms, the jiva can undergo emotional turmoil and transformations due to that identification with matter. So therefore, tatastha jiva can come under influence of the illusory potency of Maya, whereas the chit jiva, the non-marginal, completely spiritual aspect of spiritual reality, they never come under the influence of even the illusory potency of Maya. That is what I meant. Is that relevant, Mataji?
Yes, I get it. I get it. It's kind of what I thought, but I wanted to make sure. Thank you so much, Babaji. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. Is Mother Gail?
Hi, Krishna Prabhu. Actually, I have the identical question. But I'm still a little fuzzy. So when you say that the jiva, it can come under the influence, but is not, what was the other word you used? Is not what? By Maya.
Jiva has nothing to do with matter. There is no relationship between the jiva and matter.
Remind me again the two different words you use. The jiva can come under the influence, but it doesn't. What was the other word you used?
The jiva is not affected by matter, but the jiva can imagine. Yeah, but the jiva can imagine that it is getting affected by matter.
Okay, that's all you meant.
Yeah, I will give an example. Okay. I will give an example to clarify this point. Parikshit Maharaj actually asked this question to Shukadeva Goswami in this. He said, Yad adatumato brahman deharambosya datu bihi yadrachya hetunava bhavanto janate yata. So he says, my dear Shukadeva Goswami, the spirit the soul is absolutely spiritual in nature. It has no touch of matter. But the body is completely made of matter. It is made of earth, water, fire, air, and ether. So constitutionally, they are so opposite, so different. How did their relationship happen? How did this relationship between the spirit soul and material body happen? Yadrichaya hetunava. Did it happen by chance? Or is there a deep-rooted cause for it? How did this relationship between the spirit soul and material body happen? So Shukadeva Goswami answers this question. He says, your question is wrong. That is how. So he refutes the question. He says, First thing, there is no real relationship, he says. Atmayam rite rajan parasyanubhavatmanah na ghateta artha sambandah swapna drashtur ivanjasa. He says that there is na artha sambandha. There is no real relationship between Dibba and body. That relationship is an imagined relationship. The Jiva, under the influence of the avidya potency of Maya, imagines that there is a relationship. And he gives an analogy to explain this. He says, Swapna Drashtu Rivanjas. It's like a person dreaming. So a person is dreaming, and in the dream, a tiger is chasing after him. Okay. And he is, and as long as he does not put up that dream, his suffering is very real actually. He's really puffing and panting and screaming and crying. You must have sometimes observed people sweating when they are sleeping because they had a very ghastly dream. Sometimes, you know, people shout in their dreams. Sometimes people cry in their dreams. So, all sorts of things, you have the complete gamut of emotions that people go through. I have had very, very deeply absorbing dreams where once I dreamt like my mother had passed away. And literally, I was crying so much that the pillow was wet. And in the meantime, my mother had returned back from her office and she was ringing the bell and ringing the bell and ringing the bell. It was a daydream. It was such a realistic dream. And my real mother, who was still alive and by Krishna's mercy still alive, she was ringing the bell and I did not hear because it was such an absorbing dream. So he says that the Jiva's relationship with the body is like a dream, which is created by the avidya potency. So there is no real relationship between the Jiva, but it's just an illusory relationship which is created due to the avidya potency of Maya. But even this illusory relationship is created only in the tatastha jivas, the marginal jivas. But the actual complete spiritual potency or chit shakti, they cannot come under the influence of Maya and they cannot get bewildered. That is the point that I was trying to make. Is that relevant, Madhu?
Oh, yes, Guru. Yes. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. Anything else before we move ahead? Okay, there is a question in the chat box. What is the verse number? The answer is, I think, 2.9.2. 2.9.2 is the answer. Atma maya mrite rajan parasyanubhavatmanah na gateta artha sambandha swapna drashtu vivanjasa. And the question, my memory is right, is probably 2.8.7. But you can still check. The verse is actually yad adatu mato brahman deharambosya datubihi yadrichaya hetunava bhavanto janate yata. You can go to folio and check, but if my memory is right, it is probably 2.8.7, but I think 2.9.2 or maybe 2.9.1 is the answer. Atma maya mrite rajan. So the question and answer, he asks questions in the 8th chapter. 8th chapter is full of, 2.9.1, I'm sorry. Yeah, 2.9.1 is the answer. And I probably the question is 2.8.7. Okay, you can check it in the folio. Okay, so let us continue now. So here, this is a very important want you to almost like memorize this statement because we have to sort of evaluate understand this. You know, this is a very pivotal statement. Don't skip this statement. Please read it carefully. In this regard, all inconceivable natures are under the subordination of spiritual time. Okay. We have an experience of material time. Okay. We have an experience of material time. What is the nature of material time? What is the nature of material time? The nature of material time is there is past and there is experience of past. There is present and there is experience of present. There is future and there is experience of future. What else is the experience of time? Material time destroys. Material time destroys. Just give me a second. So material time destroys. Okay. And material time induces fear, because when it destroys things which we are attached to, material time actually induces fear, and all these things are there. And material time, what are the other qualities of material time? Material time actually carries so therefore there is always fear of the uncertain, you know that fear is always there. These are the natures of this is the nature of material time. But spiritual time is different, and we don't have an experience of spiritual time. So what is the nature of spiritual time? We will try to understand. So he says, the time factor of the spiritual nature is a state of eternal present. First thing, we cannot understand this, because understanding and assimilating a subject matter, to understand or assimilate a subject matter, what is the most important thing that we need? Can someone share your thoughts? When can we understand and assimilate a subject matter? What is the most important prerequisite for understanding and experience? Yeah, the answer is right. Two devotees immediately answered. Experience. Experience is the most important critical ingredient to understand and assimilate a subject matter. If we have not experienced something, we cannot understand it. Okay. You see, in the spiritual world, there is night, there is day, there is afternoon, there is morning, afternoon, night, everything. But it is a state of eternal present. Well, this is inconceivable because in the material time, it is a state where there is coexistence of past, present and future, and that is what here it is mentioned. But in the inferior illusory energy, there are three states of existence: past, present and future. Now naturally one may ask, what does it mean that it is a state of eternal present? Well, I can only say I don't know, because I have not experienced it. I cannot tell. So this slide is very, very critical slide. You have to please listen to this slide very clearly. And I will explain in what relevance he is described. So whatever considerations arise in this regard, if related with the spiritual time factor, then no doubts will remain. But if seen otherwise, then doubts will remain. So which means, one has to understand that any subject matter within the realm of spiritual time, if you try to resolve it within the realm of material time, it will lead to doubts because you will not be able to resolve it. For example, he gives a very, very powerful example. He says, why did a pure spirit soul search for its own happiness? How many of you have this question? This is a natural question, right? How many of you have this question? Why did the pure spirit soul search for its own happiness? This is the classic jiva fall down question. Hey, if I am a pure spirit, why did I search for my own happiness? Anyone has this question? No one has this question? Then please raise your hands if you have this question. Only two devotees, three devotees have raised their hands. Okay. Gradually more people are raising their hands. Thank you. So the point is, he says, if one puts forward such a question, then doubts arising from the material time factor will manifest. Okay. So if one can give up such doubts, then he can perform devotional service. Otherwise, there will only be a series of arguments. If arguments are related to the inconceivable nature, then anarthas arise. So the point is, this is not that there is no answer to this question, but this question can be understood only by a person who is experiencing spiritual time. Why did the pure jiva fall down, or whether he fell down? All these things one can understand only if one actually becomes qualified to experience spiritual time factor. But we want to resolve this question within the material time factor. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says this will lead to doubts, because this is not a subject matter which is resolvable under the realm of material time factor. So what will happen if inconceivable subject matters, or if one tries to resolve them under the material time factor? Okay, then doubts will lead to arguments. How many of you have observed people arguing about this subject matter, about jiva fall down? Various people presenting various arguments, and there is a lot of arguments back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. How many of you have? So 200 years back, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has spread this. Not 200 years, less than that. He says that this is a subject matter that can be resolved when one reaches the stage of spiritual time factor, then one can experience it. But if you try to resolve it within the realm of material time factor, then you cannot understand. And it will lead to doubts. Doubts will lead to arguments. And if you indulge in arguments, our anarthas will rise. That is why Srila Prabhupada, when Prabhupada was asked, Prabhupada, why did the pure jiva fall down? Spiritual world. Prabhupada said, you go back and find out. So it may seem like, many times I thought, oh, is Prabhupada just avoiding this question? Is Prabhupada just avoiding this question? What is this? Go back, find out. This doesn't seem like a very serious attempt to answering this question. This, I thought, oh, this seems like a very relevant question to me, but of trivializing this question by answering in this way. I felt like that. But when I read this explanation by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Then I understood that's exactly what Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is also trying to tell. What Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is trying to tell is go back and find out. Because while staying in this material world, material consciousness, experiencing the material time, it is not possible to resolve and understand the answer for this question. So this is a question whose, not that there is no answer for this question, the answer is intelligible only to a person who is at the stage of who is at the stage of self-realization, who can experience spirit time. Only such a person can experience. So now, this is not something which is very difficult to understand in one sense. Because there are so many subject matters in this world which can be understood with some biological maturity. For example, if there is a 3-year-old or 4-year-old boy, and if you try to explain to him male-female attraction, conjugal attraction between male and female, he just cannot understand because he lacks the biological maturity to understand the subject matter. So it's not that there is no reasonable explanation. But why do they attracted to females? Now, the boy has no experience of that. That question itself makes no sense to him because he lacks that experience. For him, he is being attracted to other boys or girls of the same age. You know, he just wants to play. There is no specific conjugal attraction there. So certain subject matters with a proper level of it leads a biological maturity to understand certain subject matters. And certain other subject matters, one needs some intellectual maturity to understand, right? So if a fifth grade person, you teach him differential calculus, he will not understand, right? So you say dy by dx and he will say, what do you mean dy by dx? Only numbers divided, alphabets cannot be divided. You know, he may say like that because all that he knows is simple addition, subtraction, multiplication and division. So when you say dy by dx, he says, you know, that by symbol is for division. That's what he knows. So he will say, oh, you cannot divide alphabets. I thought you can divide only numbers like that. So because he lacks that intellectual maturity to understand subject matter. So these are easy for us to understand, right? Certain things need biological maturity to understand. Certain things need intellectual maturity to understand. Similarly, certain things need devotional maturity to understand. Not that there is no answer to this question, but the answer can be at the level of bhava and prema, where we gain access to the spiritual time, the realm of spiritual time. Then the answer can be understood. Otherwise, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, it will lead to doubts because you are trying to resolve a subject matter which can be resolved only in the spiritual realm. It can be understood only in the spiritual realm. You are trying to resolve it in the material realm. So what will happen? It will lead to doubts. Then doubts will lead to arguments. And arguments about inconceivableness will naturally lead to anarthas. So therefore, one very important aspect of progressing with confidence is to resolve doubts And to resolve doubts, one should know what subject matter be understood at what level of spiritual maturity. What level of spiritual maturity is needed to understand what subject matter? Otherwise, if we prematurely try to understand certain subject matters, become qualified to understand it, then it will naturally lead to doubts. Doubts will lead to arguments, and arguments will lead to anarthas, and anarthas will ruin our spiritual life. So therefore, not that everything's achintya. There are subject matters which are achintya to any living entity, whether he is conditioned soul or liberated soul or nitya siddha, anyone. There are certain subject matters which are completely inconceivable to them, to the living entities. It is conceivable only to Krishna. And certain subject matters are inconceivable to conditioned souls, even sadhakas. But when they reach the level of devotional maturity at the stage of bhava and prema, when they reach the stage of self-realization, at the realm of in the realm of spiritual time, they can understand certain subject matters. And certain subject matters can be conceived with progressively higher levels of devotional maturity. Say, for example, someone at the stage of nishta, someone at the stage of anartha nivritti cannot understand how can someone never feel sleepy. I will give you a proposition. You tell me whether you feel like that. Prabhuji, it is inconceivable for me that someone will never feel sleep during japa. There could be someone who will never feel distracted while performing any devotional activities. There could be a person who always feels constant taste for practicing devotional service throughout the day, throughout the week, throughout the month, throughout the year, for many, many years. And there could be a person who is not a least by any of his past bad habits, and who, in spite of all kinds of sensual agitations happening all around him, agitation for the tongue, agitation for the eyes, agitation for the ears, agitation for the skin, agitation for the nose, despite all of that, one can steadily practice devotional service. Prabhuji, it is inconceivable for me that someone could reach that level of devotional practice. For how many of you this is inconceivable? Slowly more and more people are raising their hands. Is it conceivable for you that someone could, practice such steady devotional service? Actually, for a person at the stage of nishta, this is absolutely conceivable, because he himself is able to do it. He himself is able to do it. For a person at the stage of nishta, this is absolutely conceivable. But for a person at the stage of anartha nivritti, this is not at all conceivable. But for a person at the stage of nishta, what is experienced by a person at the stage of asakti is inconceivable. But for a person at the stage of asakti, it is very much conceivable. So therefore, it is very important to know what is conceivable at what stage of our devotional development. So therefore, we have to understand the subject. And I'm very glad Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of all the various subject matters that he could have chosen, he chose this subject matter of Jiva fall down and nails it down so beautifully here. And by telling that, well, one may ask the question, why did the pure spirit soul search for its own happiness and come to this material world? He says, is there an answer to this? Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, absolutely yes, there is an answer to this. What is the answer? Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, what is your qualification? Can you experience spiritual time? Are you self-realized? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if your answer is no, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, well, I can tell you the answer, but it will not be understandable to you, because only a person who is experiencing spiritual time can relate to the answer. So what do we understand? Yes, thank you, I agree. So doubts need not be resolved. See, one way of resolving doubts is to get intelligible answers. But another way of resolving doubts is to understand that at my level of devotional maturity, I cannot comprehend the answer. Right? We have resolved many such doubts in our own lives. Right? So someone, when a fifth grade student looks at this dy by dx and all those things, and he comes and asks, hey, what is this? Why are they trying to divide alphabets here? You tell that boy that, look, this is higher level mathematics. You will not be able to understand it right now. Then you will be able to understand. What boys say? Okay, fine, thank you. So we do resolve many of our doubts this way. The boy did have the doubts. The boy did have the doubt that how can you divide alphabets? When explained that you can't understand it right now, you have to wait for 5 more years. And when you go grade by grade by grade and develop higher and higher levels of mathematics, when you reach the 11th grade, you will be able to understand it. So he no longer has that doubt. So not for every question, we need to have an answer. There are some for which we are not qualified to understand the answer right now. So as long as we understand that at this stage, I cannot understand the answer, then that is a very viable way of resolving doubts. We can still... So here, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has not answered that question. But hasn't he resolved the doubt? Will you ever in future carry this doubt in your practice of devotional service? So therefore, this is very important, that one needs to understand and learn that we need not have an answer for every question to resolve doubts. There will be certain questions which will be unresolvable at our level of devotional maturity. When we understand that, okay, it needs a higher level of devotional maturity to resolve this doubt, it should be good enough for us, and we should be able to progress further or practice our devotional with determination and confidence. Okay. Any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share, ask. Mother Gail.
Hi, Krishna Prabhu. Well, one thing is, why is it that arguments about the inconceivable would necessarily lead to anardas or maybe even aparadas?
Why
can't people just, you know, have a civil debate over what they're not able to understand at their level of maturity?
Well, as long as at least one of the parties understands that it is a subject matter which cannot be understood at their at their level of devotional maturity, it is okay. But if both the parties are convinced that we can understand an answer to the subject matter at my level of devotional maturity, and both have a divergent understanding, so then definitely they will see some contradictions here and there, and they will keep on debating. But unfortunately, it cannot be resolved at that at their level of devotional maturity. So naturally, it will lead to at some point, it may lead to some unpleasantness, and it may lead to some, it can potentially lead to eventually if they go ahead, man.
No, I was going to say those are the words I was looking for, like potentially, possibly.
Yeah, possibly. Yes.
Maybe.
Yes,
maybe even probably, but I would, just not necessarily is what my point was.
Yeah. Yeah. Correct.
I mean, there's probably a good good chance, very good chance at the ruling, but my point was that I just didn't feel like it was necessarily so.
Yeah, okay. There is a possibility. It's not an absolute, possibility. Yeah. It's a probability. It's a good probability.
Yes, yes, I would say so too. Okay, another thing is, I just want to clarify that I think you were saying that there are marginal jivas and chit jivas, right?
I have not reduced the concept of chit jivas. But they are there.
Oh.
They are there.
Okay. Yeah. Those chit jivas who would never fall under the influence of Maya, right? Of Mahamaya.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, therefore, if there are jivas of the marginal category who have never been bound. Those are the nitya siddha. Are those nitya siddha jivas also? Are there nitya siddha jivas who are both of the marginal category and others who are of the chit category? Nitya siddhas.
Okay. Actually, when the generally, nitya siddhas are of the chit category only. But when marginal jivas, they can reach by the practice of Krishna consciousness and by perfecting Krishna consciousness, they can escape the realm of marginality and enter into the realm of chit.
Yes. Okay.
So from that point on, they will never come in touch with Maya.
Yes.
Like that. Yeah.
Okay. Great. I think I just had one last thing. it's probably a little tangential also, but you were saying that certain things can be understood only with devotional maturity. And so I was wondering if this popular debate between whether bhakti is inherited or inherent, do you think that falls under that category of needing devotional maturity, or can that actually be explained at our level? Because I do have one understanding that that I'm satisfied with, but I just wonder if you would consider that to be under this category.
That's exactly what we are discussing, right? Is bhakti inherited or is bhakti inherent?
Yes.
Does that
fall under the we need devotional maturity to understand
this?
Because it's such a debate. So if it's such a big debate,
within our community. I'm wondering if it's due to the need for devotional maturity to understand, to resolve this.
In one sense, it does need some level of devotional maturity to resolve the apparent contradictions. I mean, I don't think this is the right forum to...
I just say, you know, it's a little tangential, but I was just wondering your opinion if it falls under that category. But, you know, it's okay, we can move on.
Well, it can be a result.
Yeah, I think so.
But one needs some level of devotional maturity to certain, not the level of, one need not be self-realized, but certainly one needs some level of devotional maturity to deal with contradictions, to apparent contradictions, and not immediately jump into conclusions, and are willing to sit and peacefully read what the Purvacharyas have given, the previous Acharyas have given, and with the firm faith that that the Acharyas will not contradict either.
Yes.
So an observation of contradiction is probably due to my inability to resolve that contradiction, and it may just be apparent, and just that I am not able to resolve it. So such subject matters should be approached with that kind of a starting point, rather than I take this side or I take that side. Are you sure that the Acharyas themselves have taken such opposite sides, or is it just you? I would say to pit two different Acharyas on the opposite sides is in itself a little offensive to me. That may not necessarily be the case. So I would essentially start approaching the subject matter in the mood that let me try to understand how there is no contradiction, rather than which side I take.
Yes. Yes.
But the Acharyas don't contradict. Especially under such cardinal subject matters, that will be contradictions. So any contradiction that we see might be apparent, and it might just be due to my inability to resolve the contradiction. Unless we start the subject matter at this level, and if we actually start telling that I don't care what, this is one extreme, I'm just telling you know how these arguments may go. Care what Jiva Goswami says, all that matters is what Srila Prabhupada says. Well, the problem with this argument is that I thought your acceptance of Prabhupada is based on his connection parampara, right? So if your acceptance of Prabhupada is not because he is connected to the unbroken parampara, then you are essentially following a cult. You're not following a parampara, right? So you cannot make a statement like, I don't care what Jiva Goswami says. All that matters is what Srila Prabhupada says. That seems like a good sentiment, but then on what basis you accept Prabhupada as bona fide? Prabhupada said that a guru is a transparent via media, accepting the instructions from the previous acharyas and passing it down to the next level. So this is one side. I don't care which means you have accepted that Jiva Goswami and Srila Prabhupada have contradicted each other without even spending sufficient time to even how could you give so much of benefit of doubt to your own intelligence that you are not even considering that maybe I am just seeing a contradiction but probably there is no contradiction here. How could we be so sure of our intelligence? Side to say that the earlier acharyas are more bona fide, the later acharyas are less bona fide. So if Prabhupada is saying something and Jiva Goswami is saying something opposite, then I would rather accept Jiva Goswami's conclusion than Srila Prabhupada's conclusion. This is again the same mistake, actually.
Yes.
You think you know better than Srila Prabhupada. You think you have more chastity to Srila Jiva Goswami than Srila Prabhupada. Right. So I would approach this subject matter by challenging my own purity, challenging my own intelligence, challenging my own devotional development to resolve this contradiction than to start with the conclusion that these two acharyas are having a contradictory view. So that is how I would approach this subject matter. Otherwise, as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, if this will lead to a series of arguments, and these arguments will lead to anarthas, actually. You reject that person and you reject the other person. I reject you. You reject me. They should be kicked out of the Gaudiya Parampara. Or they should be kicked out of ISKCON and all that. Well, I mean, there is no need for all these things. It's all due to our trusting our intelligence much more than the integrity of the acharyas, actually. So, yeah, that's my take on this.
Yeah, beautiful, Prabhu. Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna. Okay, so if there are no further discussion points on this subject matter, we will move on to the next, the sixth of the Dashamula Tattva, which is about the Nitya Baddha Jiva accept Maya and suffer in this world. Because the Jivas are, of course, I don't want to get into the, make it more complex. Because in Jaiva Dharma, there is a still more sophisticated, classification. But in Bhaktiya Loka, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is keeping it a little more simpler. So at this stage, we will keep it simpler only. Very soon, Jaiva Dharma also, because Manasiksha is getting over. On Tuesdays, maybe in 2 or 3 weeks, Manasiksha will get over. And subsequently, I'm planning to start Jaiva Dharma there. So let's keep it as simple as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has kept it here in Bhaktiya Loka. And we will just the little more sophisticated classification when we discuss Jaiva Dharma on Tuesdays. If you have time, you can join. So here, he says, the teachings of Amnaya, reading the fifth reality, is this. The living entities who are searching for their own happiness, accept Maya, is situated nearby, and thus enjoy happiness and distress under the grip of material time. So, the problem with the Tatastha Jiva is proximity to Maya. Okay, so The problem with this tatastha jiva is proximity to maya. So they can look this way or they can look this way. But in the realm of chit shakti, maya is, they don't see maya only. They don't see maya only. There is no proximity to maya in the realm of chit shakti. Okay. So, therefore, the first stage is Isha Petasya. When the living entity turns his face away from Krishna. Okay. He turns his face away from Krishna, then Maya catches. Okay. Then, how does Maya catch? Maya makes him I'm sorry, because I am a male, I think in terms of males, so I always say male, him. So I don't have any gender bias, so please don't get me wrong. So because I am a male, I think in terms of male, so I say him. Probably if I was a female, I would have mentioned her. So yeah. So he says that, and it makes, let me take a new gender. Maya makes it identify with body. Or matter. And Maya makes it forget its constitutional nature. Okay. And then the jiva suffers duality and samsara. Okay. So this is the state of a nitya baddha jiva, eternally bound soul. Karma is nothing but a blind wheel created by Maya. Those who have not contacted Maya have no connection with karma. Those who have never contacted Maya have no connection. The entities who are searching for their own pleasure receive from the wheel of Maya gross and subtle bodies as a means to enjoy. So those who are looking for their own pleasure, they receive a gross body and a subtle body to experience pleasure from the agency of Maya. This blind wheel is found in unlimited forms, but just as it was easy for a living entity to enter, it will be easy to leave at the time of liberation. Okay, provided the person practices bhakti. Okay. Blind wheel is found in unlimited forms, but just as it was easy for a living entity to enter, it will be easy to leave at the time of liberation. When he becomes qualified for liberation, it will be easy to leave it. Okay. The living entities who are under the blind wheel of Maya are called as Nitya Baddha. Any quick discussion points, comments, questions on this theme? Mother Gail?
Yeah, when you say this blind wheel, this is blind wheel refers to the material body or karma? Because blind wheel in unlimited forms, I don't know.
Yeah. Here it refers to body only.
Yeah, so how is it that a body is referred to as a wheel?
It's body, yeah.
Yeah, I mean to say, what's the correlation between a body and a wheel?
Well, within a body, there is a cycle, right? Growth till death, you know, there is a cycle. So, and then the next body, and then like that. Or as Vanishri Mataji is suggesting here, blind wheel in unlimited forms can even mean, you know, the cycle of different species that one crosses through. So in that case, it is not unlimited wheels, but a wheel with unlimited forms. You know, like, yeah, like that.
Okay.
Okay. So, if there are no further discussion points or questions, we will move on to the next principle about the Nitya Muktas. About the Nitya Muktas. The Nitya Mukta Jiva is free of the influence of material nature. So he is free of the influence of material nature. So, he says, in regard, the word Nitya is applied in regard to material time. Okay. So this is a very important, you know, we may just read this statement and go to the next statement. So Nitya is with respect. Read the next statement. When by the touch of spiritual substance, the spiritual time factor is awakened, then their conditioned nature is seen as temporary. This is a very powerful thing. So, the Nitya Baddha, the word Nitya means eternal, is within the realm of material time. But the moment he comes in touch with spiritual subject matter, which means the moment he becomes realized and reaches the stage of and becomes qualified to experience spiritual time, then the conditioned nature is seen as temporary. See, the word Nitya has multiple meanings. So Nitya or eternal. Okay. When it can mean anadi and ananta. Okay. Nitya can mean adi plus anta. Or Nitya can mean anadi but anta. Okay. So when you talk about anadi and ananta, without any beginning, without any end, or eternal, Nitya means eternal, then the word Nitya, eternal in terms of no beginning and no end, it refers to things like the soul. The soul is never created and it can never be destroyed. It is eternally manifest and present. Sometimes the word eternal or Nitya is used in this context. So sometimes the word Nitya is used or meaning eternal is used in terms of this bondage. Okay. Or it is used in terms of liberation of the soul. Okay. So liberation has a beginning. Okay. But after liberation, then it is eternally liberated. So the word Nitya is also used in that way, which has a beginning but no end. And the word Nitya is also used in terms of that which has no beginning, but it has an end. This is karma, bondage. Okay. So bondage as a beginning, bondage as a beginning, but the moment one touches spirit time, that bondage has an end also. Similarly, liberation, so bondage has no beginning, but it has an end. Liberation has a beginning, but it has no end. But the soul, if you see, has no beginning, no end. So the word Nitya or eternal is different context can mean different things. Ananta with respect to soul, Adi but Ananta with respect to liberation, Ana plus but Anta with respect to karma or bondage. Right? So he says, then by the touch of spiritual substance, the spiritual time factor is awakened. Then the conditioned nature is seen as temporary. By the mercy of sadhus, mahajans and Krishna, and by the strength of many lifetimes of pious activities in devotional service, the conditioned soul achieves auspiciousness. So this is talking about satam kripa leading to mahat seva, leading to agyata sukriti, leading to shuddha in bhakti. Okay. He says, by the mercy of the sadhus, satam kripa, mahajans and Krishna, and by the strength of many lifetimes of activities and devotional service, which is satam kripa leading to mahat seva, which is leading to agyata sukriti, many lifetimes, again it is mentioned here, it leads, the conditioned souls achieves auspiciousness. That auspiciousness is actually shraddha and bhakti. Okay. As stated in Chaitanya Charitamrit Madhya Leela Srimad Bhagavatam, it is mentioned, Kona bhagya karo samsara kshayon mukahai, sadhu sangeta be krishne rati upajai. This is the same. And then this is the Bhagavatam verse. Bhavapavargo brahmato yada bhavet janasya tarhyat satsamagamaha satsang satgatav paravareshetvai jayate matihi. So he says, by good fortune one becomes eligible to cross the ocean of material nations. Okay. That good fortune is actually shraddha, bhakti shraddha, okay, which comes through agyata sukriti, which comes through mahat seva, which comes through samkrappa, compassion of a living entity, compassion of Vaishnava, which leads to his engaging the jiva in some kind of devotional activity, which leads to some appreciation from the side of the living entity, accumulation of agyat sukriti, which leads to bhakti shraddha. That is what is good fortune. By good fortune, one becomes eligible to cross the ocean of nescience, which means by practicing bhakti. And when one's term of material existence decreases, one may get an opportunity to associate with pure devotees. This is actually what is mentioned as the sequence is actually sadhu sangha leading to rati, leading to end of samsara. Okay, but here he says, here the this is the actual order. But in Bhagavatam and in Chaitanya Charitamrit, in this particular, this is Muchakunda's prayers in the 10th canto, he says, the order is end of samsara leads to sadhu sangha leads to rati. Now, why this kind of an order is given? The acharyas explain, sometimes in the Sanskrit language, when the cause and effect are very quick, then sometimes the effect is mentioned before the cause, just to indicate this is a literary ornament, which is a kind of what they call as atishayokti. Atishayokti is a kind of literary ornament. In this, it's one kind of atishayokti is where when as soon as the cause manifests immediately, without much loss of time, when the effect also manifests, then that is called as then what they do is mention the effect and then say from the effect comes the cause, as if you know you can't really understand whether the effect is first or the cause is first. So they can't understand that, right? So that is called as atishayokti. So here it is mentioned that end of samsara comes first, then one gets sadhu sangha and rati. But the meaning is, as soon as you get samsara, as soon as you get sadhu sangha, then within a way samsara will come to an end. That is the meaning of this whole thing. Okay, so that is what here it is mentioned, that by the mercy of sadhus, mahajans and Krishna, and by the strength of many lengths of pious activities in devotional service, the conditioned soul achieves auspiciousness. Okay, so by good fortune, one becomes able to cross the ocean of material nations, and when one's term of material existence decreases, one may get an opportunity to associate with pure devotees. By such association, one's attraction to Krishna is awakened. You see, this is atishayokti. This is the atishayokti. First he says end of samsara, then one gets sadhu sangha, then one gets rati. But in reality, one gets sadhu sangha and then one gets rati, then the samsara ends. But this reverse order, or a kind of sort of flipping of the order, is mentioned because the cause and effect is so close to each other that it is very difficult to say which is the cause, which is the effect. That. Okay. So he says, by the association of sadhus, material distress is vanquished. By the mercy of Krishna, one attains firm faith. Okay. Then, by the strength of his devotional service and Krishna's mercy, a living entity cuts the bondage of Maya and attains Krishna's service. Okay. So like that, gradual development of faith. From Shraddha to Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Anuvarti, Nishtha, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, Prema. By the mercy of Krishna, the Baddha Mukta Jivas, those who achieve freedom from bondage, easily attain Salokya, the abode of Krishna, with those who have never entered into Maya because of searching for Krishna's happiness. So, once these Sadhana Siddha Jivas enter Kunta or the spiritual world, they will cohabit that realm with the Nitya Muktas, who have never turned their face towards Maya. And so, but they become Baddha Mukta Jivas. They were once bound, but now they have gone back. Like that. So, this is about the how you know, one can actually become a Nitya or a Mukta Jiva, or a liberated soul. Of course, as I mentioned, there is a much more sophisticated treatment of this subject matter in Jaiva Dharma. We will discuss it in little more detail when we discuss Jaiva Dharma. But as of now, I will pause here. If there are any questions on this topic, we will take next time, because it's already, we are 3 minutes over time. So I don't wish that devotees go to bed late. So we will pause here. But thank you all very much for your patient listening and your enthusiastic participation. Hope to have your association next week also. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai. Sri Bhaktialoka ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.